With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, driving passion for sport and communities throughout Ireland and abroad.
We may not be able to get in on the sporting action we're used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their second year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers on their new and used vehicles, exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out Renault.ie/JA to find out more.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on,
Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Good morning, how are y'all? You're very welcome along to the Irish Examiner in conjunction with Renault, our hurling podcast here. Hard to believe, we've only about two left, probably a preview show, and the day after show for the All-Ireland, it's incredible the way it has flown by. But we knew, I suppose it was a quick fire championship, but the notches, I think, have been ramped up as we go along, and it's been great. And I think the people of the country, there's only, you know, around the last 2 weeks, they're really realising the value of the GAA and, you know, from our point of view for hurling. And unique pairing in the final as well, fair to say, after the weekend. It's great. Big crew today, delighted to be joined by Mark Landers. The bookcase is getting full there behind him. He's investing a few of the well-earned dockets. TJ. TJ, you could be changing the background there now to Crow Park. Take us away from the Gaelic grounds there, will you, in the background?
Yeah, no, this is the home of hurling here, the Gaelic grounds for us. So, yeah, great to be back in the final again, Dalo. So, yeah, I think this team deserves it. So, yeah, great to have the big two in the final, finally.
Oh, well, two Munster teams anyway. There's a whole Munster lineup today. So, delighted as well to be joined by Ger Cunningham, back with us. How are you, Ger?
Good day, all her things. All good.
Yeah, great. This morning, sure. It's mighty. Looking forward to 2 weeks' time. And delighted, lads, for his debut on the show. And we'd love to have him maybe more often, maybe next season. Mount Sinai's finest, Tony Brown. How are you keeping, Tony?
Great, Dalo. Great form this morning, by the way. Wouldn't I be?
I didn't see you in a while, Brownie, and I'm loving the beard, like.
Yeah, I'm stuck at home the last couple of months, so hibernating a little bit. So I said I'd turn into a bit of a Grizzly Adams, but no, I'm due the old haircut, so the sooner the barber's open, the better, and get myself in shape for the All-Ireland final, Dalo.
Yeah, will you be back to the Brownie? We think you're still around the same shape, I'd say, like. But will you be, you'll be trimming it off?
I'm still around at 12 stone 2 pounds, which was me fighting weight. So still in, they haven't done much looking after two young kids. So, hoping still small bit in shape, but, you know, might think about getting out of the house for a little bit and making a comeback with the club, maybe Junior B or something like that, you know.
Junior B, I'll tell you, we could organise a challenge match with Gary Spillane. His teacher's giving it one more year, himself and Donnie as well, you know. But, Tony, great to have you. We want to have you for the whole show. I know you have two babies to be minding there. But a fantastic win for you. Like, I was only reflecting on it last night late, that not alone, I suppose, was it Waterford's greatest second half, but it might have been hurling's greatest second half as well, in terms of one team completely, you know, coming back and hurling the half of their lives. Incredible display, wasn't it?
Absolutely, Dalo. Yeah, you'd have to say that. I mean, probably the old cliche, really. It was a game of two halves. I think no one would have expected what we witnessed in the second 35 minutes, really, from Waterford. I mean, it's not very often that you see a Kilkenny team taking the foot off the throat. You know that well. I know that well. And not often you see that, but you just have to say that our lads were just absolutely heroic in the second half, and one of the finest displays I've ever seen from any inter-county team, really, in the second half. And I don't know, you often hear these things like what was said at halftime or what wasn't said at halftime, but I think what was showing was huge.
Sorry, Brody, that's Joe Cunningham's dog back in India. Yeah.
I was going to say, Dale, is that that deaf dog hanging around?
there's a lot of comedy on this show as well, Tony. Together.
I was wondering, was that Brian Cody in the background listening to me?
Brilliant. Go on, you were expounding about that display.
Yeah, but no, listen, phenomenal. And as I just mentioned there, it's not often you see Kilkenny taking the foot off the throat. I'm really surprised to see that. But you would have to say our lads were absolutely heroic in that second half. One of the finest displays I've ever seen from an inter-county team that were seriously, seriously under pressure and looked like the game was dead and buried. And what they found or what was said at halftime, I don't know. As I said, you often hear of things being mentioned at halftime, but I don't know. I think that this group of players, they've shown down through the years at underage that they have great leadership qualities and great batting qualities at minor at under 21. And they weren't fazed by it. And they said, look, we've got to have a go at this. And they had a go. And what was unbelievable to see really was to take on the Masters in the aerial battle in the second half and to come out on top on that was phenomenal stuff, really, you know. I live here in Ballyduff, Dalo, the homestead of the great Tom Chastey. So a heroic man, and he would have been very, very proud of what went on there up in Croke Park on Saturday evening. So just thrilled for them, thrilled for Waterford. Like, as you know, we hadn't won a game for 3 years, so the transformation has been big. And just it's surreal, really, to think that we're now in an All-Ireland final in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. And Ger, you would have seen him up close, obviously, Ger, in the Munster semi-final and in the National League, obviously, as well. We would have seen the matches, but you would have seen it up close. Did you see something different in him, we'll say, even early in the year or even the day of the semi-final, that it was in something fresh, something different under Liam Cahill?
Yeah, you'd have to say, Dale, looking at it, like, what was very impressive against us that day, like, you know, their fitness that people have been speaking about, the fitness levels has, you know, they came really into our match and they were in a really, really good shape. Definitely the benefit of having the Waterford Championship finishing in, you know, towards the end of August. I think definitely they took the advantage. They brought it to their fitness levels are superb. And I think as the games have gone on, you've seen that even in the Munster final against Limerick, they never gave up. They never went away. And I think in the lead up to Saturday, the one thing I was saying was that, you know, they've got serious pace, serious fitness. And I think the style of game that they're playing, Dalo, even as well, you know, I know Tig Walker from his UCC days, like, you know, the past couple of years, Tig has been asked to kind of sit back and mind the house and mind the D. He's driving forward every opportunity. He's playing off the shoulder. You know, he's playing like their whole method and their whole, you know, the way they play the game. It's playing off the shoulder. It's a different style than that was there under Derek. So like, these guys, they seem to be able to play with a lot more freedom. And and that was probably one thing that we noticed this year, rather than in the past, that you know, they seem to be attacking from everywhere. You know, get a ball in the half back line, they run it, play it short. There's a guy off the shoulder, and their fitness levels are really, really, really good. And they just seem to be playing with a great freedom this year. And certainly, you know, you can see the benefit. Obviously, just looking there, Liam Cahill has been involved in All Ireland finals at minor in 2016. Under 21, 2018 and 19, and now he's back in an All-Ireland final again. So that's a serious record of the last number of years. And whatever he's brought to the table in Waterford, like, you know, it's been superb to share for him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Brownie, which I don't know, like, even I'd be friendly with Milan, as you know, and he was saying to me early in the year that he went down to watch him training a couple of nights, and he was awfully impressed with Beavan's coaching and that kind of thing. And would there been a feeling around the place that this change was going to kick in, do you think, earlier on the year? Like,
it's hard to say, really, because, like, I suppose Liam watching from far, I suppose he was very, over the last couple of years, he was very focused on the Tipperary setup. So obviously, when he took the Waterford job, he probably didn't realise what he was getting himself into. But, you know, I suppose when he got to view these players close up, he realised that, you know, with a lot of players that Pádraig Fanon had brought in last year had serious pace and, you know, serious, they were serious athletes, you know, Caelum Lyons, Jack Pendergast, Jack Fagan, and all these players are well, well capable of running and top class athletes, you know. But you would certainly have to give credit to Mikey Bevans in the way he's coached his team over the last couple of months, you know, and you can see where the Tipperary, if any county can take on Kilkenny, it's Tipperary and the traditional teams. But, you know, he's brought that style where he really, really likes to direct that. I see an interview from Stephen Bennett, and a lot of the coaching philosophy and methodology was really going direct at the goal rather than down the wings and down the side and sidestepping players. And you can see where that creates huge amount of problems in the modern game. And yeah, you can see Ger mentioned their physical fitness there. I would say that most of their physical fitness and conditioning has come from real game specific training, you know, little bit like Kilkenny 15-on-15 or whatever, but they're really, really game ready, you know, and you could see that in them. And really what they've added to their game, which what we've been lacking for a couple of years, is goals. And you know, goals win big games in All-Ireland semi-finals. And it was certainly an unbelievable goal from Stephen Bennett that opened up that defence by running straight at him again and brought us back into the game. But I would say, you know, that... certainly, I think you have two top-class coaches now facing each other in an All-Ireland final. So that's going to be very interesting from a tactical point of view. If they go tactical, I don't know. But you would have to say you have two top-class hurling coaches facing each other now for an All-Ireland final, and a big workload ahead of those two guys, because you'd notice coaches even giving team talks there at half-time and, you know, during the quarter. So they have a huge role to play in what's happening at the moment. And that's going to be fascinating just to see how they get their players ready for that tactical battle.
Yeah, and Brownie, I know it to be desperate, frustrating for the likes of yourself. You might get some gig up there for 2 weeks' time, but for people not to be able to go, like fellas like yourself, to give nearly two decades hurling for Waterford, and like, but will it be a slight help to Liam Cahill and the team that they'll probably be less hyped than usual in Waterford? Obviously, there was a lot of hype the last two finals, I suppose, less or so, from 08 to 17. But at the same time, there was the hurling mad county and starved of success. I mean, the one big county in Ireland that's really waiting for the famine to be bridged, let's say Limerick did it 2 years ago from 73, but years since 59, I suppose that's the one we're all waiting for. And I suppose in general, hurling people would love to see it happen this year, except TJ, I don't know. But you think it'd be a help, though, in terms of just 2 weeks, no fuss, no... Of course, there'll be a bit of fuss, and of course, there'll be a bit of a press night of sorts. It won't be like the normal press night, I presume, but that'd be low-key, like.
It's a fair point, in fairness. We have a tendency to get carried away with ourselves pre-matches and post-matches, you know, and I think sometimes you need a little bit of luck in sport, and I think the cards have fallen right for Liam Cahill, in fairness, in his first year as well, you know. I mean, let's be honest about it. I presume when he came into the job that his brief would have been really, look, Liam, get us a victory here in the championship. So sometimes you need a little bit of luck. And basically, I don't think that the new format that came in, like home and away, suited Waterford. As soon as I heard that was coming in, I said, look, I don't know about that. We're not great travellers or whatever. But when we went back to the format that we have now, realistically, if we got our first victory, we were in a quarter final of an All-Ireland, you know, and things have fell well for him. But I certainly do think that the low-key build-up has benefited Waterford, you know, and particularly some of their younger players as well, you know. Yes, they know people are watching at home, but at the same time, then the preparation, people can't get at them. They don't have to worry of tickets coming up. They don't have a full stadium going in, you know. And some players, and particularly big counties, Tipperary, Cork, these guys, they thrive on supporters, you know. And you can see where they probably lacked a little bit in performance or whatever. But certainly, it certainly benefits Waterford. And we've only a 2 week of a build up now. We don't have 3 weeks or whatever. And I think we're just. You know, it's set up nicely for this team to go into this game, and it's a fair point, in fairness.
Yeah, I think that's a huge help, just reflecting on that the last time. And Mark, we don't have the thoughts of John Mullan riding naked down the quays in Waterford either this time around. I asked him, was that still on? I see a bit of it on Twitter, like yourself, he's not on Twitter, but he doesn't have as many spies as you have. So I had to send him on a picture of a kind of a silhouette of himself on the horse naked. Hey, boy, he says, that was in 2017. That's not going to go on this year. So, but you've liked him from the get-go, Mark.
I did. I'm a big supporter of the Waterford brand of hurling, I suppose, for the last 5 or 6 years. There's been a couple of years where they've disappointed me and didn't perform to what their ability is. But just a combination of everything has fallen, as Tony has alluded to there, everything has fallen into place this year, I think, with the knockout scenario as well. And I suppose Liam Cahill's intentions were, I suppose, sounded early in the National League game. The first game I saw Cork and Waterford this year, where it was a very, very unknown Waterford team, and they ran Cork off the field on that particular occasion. And I just said, that's a really, really new brand that I hadn't seen, and the fitness levels of the players were dramatic. And then, I suppose, the real leaders have stood up, the big three, really, I suppose, the Buck and Jamie Bann. Aston Gleeson, in particular, had his best performance of the year so far, even though it was particularly in the second half. But we mentioned in the pod last week about the likes of Bennett now becoming a leader, and he was outstanding on Saturday night for them. And then throwing Jack Fagan, who was excellent again now on Saturday night. And when the game was in the melting pot, and Tony mentioned about winning the Sky, Jack Fagan was the one filler for me that really contributed up front on a lot of the puckouts. And then the real ace in the pack this year has been Caelum Lyons at wingback. He is a thundering halfback. He made 4 or 5 soirees up the field, got a couple of points, and his matchup with Garrod Hegarty in the All-Ireland final is going to be mouth-watering, because, you know, they're two big men with plenty of pace. Hegarty has been outstanding for Limerick all year, but so has Caelum Lyons. The big thing for Waterford, for me, low-key, keep the press away from the players, keep the supporters away from the players, and bring a performance for 70 minutes now. Like, to me, in the first half, they were in the headlights at hearts. And I'm judging by that, by Stephen Bennett's free-taking. If that was Parky Queeve or Tullis, I think he'd have slotted a couple of frees in the first half. He hit him wide, which isn't his form. He's an excellent free-taker. And I thought Waterford was certainly very tentative in the first half. But I suppose the second half performance, to get 217 in the second half, 216 from play, that shows a style of hurling, an ability to score. And you'll need to be able to score against Limerick. And the one slight advantage they'll have is that Limerick haven't been getting goals, Anthony, all year long. And that's a big advantage. Waterford have been getting goals. They got 3 against Clare, 2 on Saturday night. They're really going into this with nothing to lose and everything to gain. But they have the power to back it up. That's the big thing. They're there on merit is the big thing.
But lads, just to come in on that day, though, like, you have to look at Waterford with a balanced overview of them. You know, like, people are probably around the country are saying, where has this come from? You know, like, Waterford reaching the All-Ireland final. But if you really look in closely and analyse it closely, the backbone of this team is a team that won a minor All-Ireland in 2013. Actually, Limerick pipped them was at the game in Gaelic grounds. The backbone of those both teams are that 2013 All-Ireland team. Limerick actually went on and won the Munster title after a replay. Waterford went on and won the All-Ireland. That team continued on then and won an under-21 All-Ireland, scored 5-15 against a Galway team that was led by Conor Whelan. They won a National League in 2015 and obviously in an All-Ireland in 2017. This is their second All-Ireland in 4 years. So, you know, whilst there's been a fair transformation, as it appears, this is a very, very experienced and a group of players that are used to winning and you know, able to handle Croke Park and able to handle the situation. So it's not like the skill was always there. If you know, you're probably watching college games and Anthony there and Jer. A lot of the Waterford players that stand out in college games have been Waterford players over the last couple of years. So the skill levels have been there. I think Cal has brought a huge amount of resilience. I suppose to go for goals when they're needed, and I suppose he just made the hard calls early on in the season and stamped his authority. And you could see where he kind of, like, he's very passionate about managing, and You can see maybe where he models his style a little bit off Cody and Eamon O'Shea and these guys, and he's a big learner, and he's put that into the team, you know.
And just to pick up on a point that Tony has made there, Anthony, about Cahill and ruthlessness, Jake Dillon got the brunt of it on Saturday night, and nobody has picked up on it. The fact that he was taken off after the first water break, it showed a fierce intent immediately from Cahill, I suppose. And Jake had a fantastic Munster final, and he had a fantastic game against Clare as well. And I thought Cahill made a fierce move to take him off so early.
I have it in my notes here, Landers.
Don't worry. Yeah, good man. Yeah. You have a lot of scribbles.
Rootless Cahill.
Yeah. Dillo, what impressed me most.
Morning, TJ.
Morning, Dillo. Great listening there.
Limerick calling.
Obviously, it was a seriously impressive performance, but what impressed me most is how much these guys are in the zone, right? Now, obviously, is it very straightforward to have a process and a plan that's set to every game, right? But you know, and I know, when you're on the sideline or on the pitch, right, that process is well and truly tested on 30 minutes when you're 9 points down, right? And the way they stuck to the plan, right, and in the start of the second half, even before halftime, got a couple of points, that solo point from Stephen Bennett, who is off the charts at the moment, right? But then in the second half, when Darragh Lyons gets a brilliant goal, like he nearly sprinted back out to the middle of the field faster than he needed to get onto the breaking ball, right? When Ozzy gets that point, right? Even at the final whistle, right? There's 12 different scorers on the day. It's just their complete focus and being in the zone. I was just really, really impressed with it. And like Kilkenny really and truly tested that. But once they fixed it and got to grips with the game, there was only one winner from there on. There's a lot of parallels actually between Waterford's in 2020 and Limerick in 2018. It was kind of rising from the start of the year, took a little bit of a dip in the Munster final, which kind of maybe, I won't say it took the edge off them, but just took that kind of focus off them for a while to kind of just reset and got going again. So there's a lot of parallels, but they do have, as Mark said there, they have five or six players that are just off the charts at the moment and will get on any team.
In saying all that, it's hard to sum up Kilkenny's, I suppose, slump or collapse, really. I know you've seen that against Dublin, but you just don't associate that with Cody's philosophy and the way they go about their business. And geez, like one man you have to mention in this is, you know, like I know I'm thrilled Waterford won, but TJ Reid, like, you know, what an unbelievable player, you know. You just wonder where they are. You never write them off, obviously, but you just wonder where they are without them. But it's just hard to summarize how that happened, isn't it? You know, 9 points up and cruising in at half time, foot on the throat, and I'm still trying to figure out how did that happen?
Yeah, they were seven up at halftime, and Owen Cody got the first point to the second half as well to push it out to eight again, and the next score was Bennett's goal, I think, you know. So I just thought, I know what you think, Ger, but I think there's a lack of pace. Like, I'm not, they're all fit. You won't be any other way under that regime, but I just think there's a lack of sprinters, if you like. And you could pick eight or nine guys in the Waterford team that you'd say is, like, Kevin Moran was always, as you know, Tony, lightning fast. Now he's shoving on in years, but he still would maintain most of that pace. But like, you could pick six or seven or eight other guys. You couldn't, could you pick a matchup on the Kilkenny team that would beat them in a 100 metre sprint or a 50 metre sprint or even a 30 metre sprint? You're right. I just think there's a lack of pace there.
Yeah, it's, I suppose there's a certain focus on it now. You see the likes, the athletes that are out there at the moment, and the speed, the likes of, as Mark said, Caleb Lyons and these guys, Daisy Hutchinson, they're flyers, and they're really, they bring a huge amount of pace. And I suppose Kilkenny over the years, I suppose they're a team that's probably been around a long time. You know, they've been, a lot of those guys have been there, thereabouts. And, you know, they might be, like, I suppose if you look at Billy Ryan, is probably the fastest of their forwards. Like, and, you know, when you look at it, you know, TJ, Fogarty, John Donnelly, Martin Keown, Richie Hogan, as you said, they're not blessed with huge pace. But, like, again, going back to the point that Tony made, like, it's just, it's so un-Kilkenny, like, you know, from the point of view that you go 7 or 8 points up, and all of a sudden, the goal just turned the match, and it had a huge bearing on the game. And Waterford just got serious momentum. But it's so Kilkenny, like, maybe maybe the flaws were there at the start of the year when Dublin came back from, you know, 15, 16 points down and could have nearly won the game at the end.
Went level, like.
Went level. Maybe at the time we kind of dismissed it, like they were saying, maybe Kilkenny kind of just took the foot off the pedal, like, you know, but that's twice now in two games this year where they've let leads go that they normally would not do. Like in the past, they would just close it out. You know, they tack on, they go after the juggler, they'd be going 9, 10, 11 points ahead and you wouldn't get back on it. And, you know, as I said, maybe it's just a change of the guard from the point of view that some of these guys have been around a long time and, you know, Waterford coming up, you know, they know them very well. As Tony said, their success there over the last number of years, they're used to winning. These guys, I listed a few of them there as you were calling them out. We've had 7 or 8 in Cork in the last number of years, just in the recent past, who came through Waterford. And they were probably some of the best players that UCC had. You know, De Burka, Paddy Manny, Jamie Byrne. You know, they're top players. Like, you know, and you throw in the Ian Kinneys, Conor Gleesons, Dara Fives, great players. And, like, you know, they're now at the peak of their career. And, you know, it's showing for them. And, you know, from Kilkenny point of view, as Tony said, you take TJ Reid out of that second half performance, and like it was just a, from their point of view, it was just they'd be so disappointed in the way you know, to go from at one stage 9 ahead to lose by 4. That's a 13-point turnaround. That's unheard of, Kilkenny.
Yeah,
but Dale, the third quarter, Cody has mastered that probably over a long period of time, and to get beaten 111 to 4 points in that third quarter, like as Gerard said there, Kilkenny were 9 up on 30 minutes and Ozzy levelled it on 50 minutes. So that'll just tell you about how significant that third quarter was.
But as good as Waterford were, and we'll acknowledge what we saw in front of our eyes, Fagan dropping back deep, fetching balls at right half back and being able to get upped in and assist in the attacks at the other end. As good as Waterford were, Stephen Bennett's goal, thing of beauty, stuff we've always known that was in the locker with him. I have to say, it was an element of a collapse as well by a team that we don't associate with that.
In the first half, right, I'm not sure exactly, but Ty De Burka had very little plays in the first half of the game. I think maybe 2 or probably 3 plays, right? Kilkenny's use of the ball from the back through that half back line, through the line, was better than the norm that they would expect from Kilkenny, right? But for me, in the second half, Waterford pushed up on that, right? And gave Kilkenny zero, the tackles and the intensity went up a notch, and they gave him no time in the ball. Kilkenny couldn't use it. And then when Waterford dominated the skies, then Kilkenny had nowhere to go at all.
Yeah, but another contributing factor, Dale, is that like none of the 4 subs that came on for Kilkenny made any impact whatsoever, whereas all the Waterford subs had a huge impact. Particularly, I suppose, young Lyons, who got a critical goal, but he was on a huge amount of ball.
Neil Montgomery.
Yeah, Neil, excellent, huge. Excellent. But like, Walter, non-existent. Colin Finlay, non-existent. And now it comes into question the picking of Richie Hogan. And we'd mentioned last week in the pod that we felt that, I certainly felt the difficulties in the full back line for Waterford, in fairness to Ian Kenny and Shane McNulty, were outstanding on the night. But if you had TJ in one corner and you had Colin in the other corner, I thought they would have troubled him in the air, getting the ball into the full forward line. But Kilkenny changed their whole approach to it. They picked Richie inside in the full line with Billy Ryan and Owen Cody, and they were more looking at placing ball into the sides, I thought. And on umpteen occasions, Killian Buckley in particular was looking up the field and he got turned over and looked slow in his delivery of the ball. And maybe that was because Ty De Burka was slotting back in front of him. But I thought that was a big changing point, was the zero impact of the Kilkenny subs and a massive impact by the Waterford subs in the second half.
Can I just ask you, Tony, do you think they might be caught in kind of no man's land? Like, Mark alluded to there now, type of ball, trying to play in, and we know, you know more than anyone, I suppose, of us here, that, like, Cody had a certain way of playing it, and I just think, if you look at the likes of Pádraig Walsh at the moment, he's kind of in no man's land. Like, Pádraig Walsh, straightforward hurler, a bit like Tommy, you know, win his own ball and let it up into the danger zone. He's kind of given the short balls now, and they're half hit and they're missed. And I don't know, are they somewhere, like, they're trying to bring a tactical aspect into it? Like, don't tell me that they always had a bit of that. We always remember Owen Larkin going back corner back at times to help out. But there is a little bit of that at the moment, a transition period that no one is quite sure where they are.
Yeah, it's true. And certainly when I heard the team with no Colin Finlay or Walter Welch in it, I was hugely surprised and happy, to tell you the truth, you know. And yes, when you look at them, they're trying to change it up a little bit from the previous way they went. They're trying to, you know, obviously feel that the game with sharp puck outs and sharp ball, like they, you wonder, should they just stick to what they're good at, you know, all down through the years, and they look uncomfortable at times doing it. You see, they're just the masters at direct ball in, and maybe they should have attacked that those two cornerbacks in the air early. I don't know, but yes, they're in the transition period of that, and maybe it's just something that don't suit them.
Yeah, like, I mean, you go back, you go back down through the ages, the last two decades, the defenders got the ball and they lumped it down the field. And Richie Power, as quoted as saying, you know, he was always asked, what kind of a ball do you like? He says, the only ball I don't like is the one that doesn't come in. So he didn't care how it came into him, just get the ball into the forward line and we'll do the rest. And that, to me, has been the big change. They went for trying to place the ball into the full forward line, and it didn't work for them. Whereas heretofore, it has been all the backs are just lashing it down the field and they'd compete like dogs for it.
Yeah, but don't say, Marcus, those days are gone. Like, most of those good coaches now will tell you, like, you play a team that lumps the ball down top of you, you take that all day, all night long, right? Because your defenders, you have numbers there, you've tied the broke sitting in the pocket, and then when they get that ball, they're running it through the lines and they'll hurt you every single time. Like, I know that they were very good at it, but the game has changed. And today I've just turning as a defender and lumping ball on, right? And expecting the guy to win. Like, you've got a load of defenders now, right? Who might say, well, I'm not going to win this ball, but you ain't going to catch it either. They get the ground, then their game plan will kick in. So it has to change, is the answer. Like, look, a team won't win in All-Ireland in coming years by lumping ball on. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, but the only thing is, you still have the same manager that's there. And to be fair, he has recreated that Kilkenny team three or four times over his tenure. But TJ, you'd have to say Kilkenny for two decades have been the masters in disguise, and they were outmastered on Saturday night, which is the first time we've seen it in two decades. So, yeah, I know that the game has changed and about lumping down, but it is a massive change to go away from the Kilkenny brand of hurling, which is plenty high balls into the forward line because they had men that could catch the ball. But when they were out fought on Saturday night, that is the first time that we've really ever seen that happening to the Kilkenny team.
Tony, I have to ask you about your club mate. He's an unbelievable player, indeed, when he turns it on. And I know he gets a lot of... We've talked about him here. Now, we haven't been tough on him, I don't think. We have mentioned how Cahill took him off against Limerick, I suppose, and didn't look too happy coming off and that kind of thing, but Cahill kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, well, look, there were certain things maybe he didn't work hard enough for, and I wanted fresh legs in. But Jesus, when he opens up like he did in that second half yesterday, I mean, the point he got that he took the ball out of the ruck. Like, I was even saying to myself, watching it at home on the couch, and saying, who'll come out with this ball now? This will be crucial. And then I saw Austin coming out with it. Like, no, I thought it might be a pop pass to someone behind him and they might have a shot or something, but Jesus, to be able to take three steps back, swivel, and put the ball over your right shoulder, over the bar. Like, isn't too many teams have a weapon like that in their makeup. Like.
No, look, we're blessed to have him in the Mount Sion Club, and we're blessed to have him in Waterford. You know, the things that, you know, I was lucky enough to, I suppose, near the end of my career, train with him and play with him a bit, and some of the things he can do is just like, I've probably never come across a player an opposing player that I marked or played on that he can do. You know, he just has his ability to catch ball and do the unexpected is you just wouldn't he's very hard to defend against because you just don't know what he's going to do, you know. And he's just a phenomenal player. But in fairness, you know, over the years, I suppose he feels that he has to give a 9-star performance or do all those kind of special skill sets that he have, where sometimes, you know, his concentration within a game, he needs to be able to read a game a little bit better in terms of his concentration, you know, not skill or anything like that, right, I'm not getting unbelievable scores here, I'm not putting sidelines over the ball, I'm not doing this, but I certainly need to work. I need to recycle the ball. I need to, you know, make a couple of tackles here and get myself into the game. And Liam is starting to develop that in him, you know. But he, and look, he was Hurler of the Year there. Is it 2017, was it?
Yeah.
2017. And You know, to carry, he, I suppose he's a young lad that feels he's carrying a lot on his shoulders, and he doesn't need to feel like that because he's coming from a minor team and an under 21 team. Stephen Bennett, Tadhg De Boer, all these players are all leaders as well. So he just has to realise that, look, he just has to do his bit for the team. And he really, you know, he showed that in the second half, certainly on Saturday night. And I think now that he could be coming right for an All-Ireland final. Yeah. And if he produces an All-Ireland final, we'll definitely, look, Limerick will be favourites, but if he produces, we'll definitely be in with a big shout.
Yeah, what was probably more impressive after that score, I think, straight after, was the lung buster in front of the Hogan stand to get that turnover. And I suppose what Tony's alluding to there, that's the piece that Liam Cahill seems to have added to his game. And even the picture of Ozzy at the final whistle, right, which is basically a picture that every manager wants to see to say, I gave you everything I had. There wasn't literally an ounce left in the man, like after the second half. And I suppose taking him off, and we said in the pod the last day, that there was signs that he was coming right. I did see him against Clare where he was getting on to the younger players, and that makes an awful difference to the guys around him. But certainly as good a second half performance as we've seen, like from Ozzy, even down through all the glory years. Unbelievable second half performance.
Fair to say, TJ, if he hits a, I don't know, 9 out of 10 was mentioned, if he hits an 8.5 out of 10, they'll be there or thereabouts, won't they? Like, because you have a fair idea the Callum Lyons and the way they're hurling, that they're going to bring us, you know, a certain amount of the way Stephen Bennett is hurling, the way De Burke is hurling. Like, if he can hit the high zones, not to be putting pressure on him now, because it isn't for us to be, there'll be enough talk about that, and we generally don't go heavy and that sort of thing here. But if he does, TJ, it does really, I mean, he didn't perform in the Munster final and he still only beat him a score. Like,
I think, to go back to what Tony said there, I think he still scored 3 points in playing the Munster final. Yes. So our standards and our expectations for the man are extremely high. But I will agree with you. I think that he is capable of winning the game on his own. There's no doubt about that. And he's a massive problem for anybody marking him because of, I suppose, what he has in the locker, in the air, on the ground, and he scores. Yeah, it's a massive plus for Waterford to have him at the top of his game. There's no doubt about that.
And lads, you know, just tipping on that, I mean, like the man could have easily, he had a couple of wides in the first half. He could have came away there with 8 or 9 points from play, yeah, which in an All-Ireland semi-final, and yet he was considered to have a very, you know, like a poor first half or whatever. And it exactly, TJ alluded to it. What do we expect from man? I see this fella at club level, you know, and two players on him and tearing him asunder, and he delivering, you know, consistently. People don't see that, and actually that's one, you know, it was great to see the club hurling this year. But just to touch on it, like the All-Ireland coming up, it's mouth-watering battles around the field. You could imagine Austin and Kyle Hayes now going at it in the half forward line there for a while, you know. It's just lining up for some individual battles all over the field. Two teams that kind of have similar kind of structures and systems, and it's just set up for some battles all over the place, you know.
Yeah, it is intriguing. And George, just to touch on Kilkenny a bit, like, and we mentioned the speed, and that's not just the sight of our eyes just looking at it. Like, you know, since the 16 final, like, the talk was that Cody had to kind of reinvent the team. Obviously, the great team was gone after that day, really. But I know, look, you still had the TJs and the Richies and etc. But has he sort of nearly overachieved? Like, he's won a league the first year after that. He got to the Ireland final last year. He's won Leinster back again this year. And we're kind of on about, do they need another makeover now, maybe? But has, in some ways, has he nearly overachieved with what he's had in the last couple of years?
Sure, but Cody, you know, we'll be talking about him. Nothing would surprise you in relation to what he's done, because the man's record is just phenomenal, like, with the success he's had. I don't know, did I read it that he's won 16 Leinster titles or something in 22 or 23 years involved with Kilkenny? 16, that's phenomenal, like, you know what I mean? So, like, he probably is lucky enough, like, that, the more you see a TJ Reid, he's certainly up there now with one of the best players that ever played a game. And, like, and that's only, you know, that's only in the last 4 or 5 years. He's gone to, you know, late 20s, he's now 32 or 33 years of age. he's developed into a brilliant player. And Cody is lucky to have a guy like him, like to have one of the all-time greats in your team. He gives you a chance every time you go. And I think, you know, they still have still really good players. You talk about Owen Murphy there a while ago, like that's probably the first time that that he's been mentioned in a negative context, because he's been so good over the last number of years. You know, you talk about Patrick Walsh being a great player, Buckley, you know, Richie, you had to Finley, Colin Finley, Richie, all great players, but he's just been the main man in that team. And I suppose, you know, Cody from that point of view then is lucky enough to have him, and he builds his team around him. And again, you'll see other guys coming through, Evan Cody, Adrian Mullen, you know, they still bring a couple through every single year. Like, but it's probably just the way, from the point of view, that they'll be hurting badly because of the way it happened to them last weekend, that Waterford just, in the second half, just got a run on them and they turned them over completely. So, it's all big questions to ask, I suppose. But I suppose from his point of view, if the season goes ahead with the intercounty season going first next year, it's a short space of time for him to move on. He doesn't have to wait 6 months to start thinking about it. 2 or 3 months' time, you're back at it again and you're off next season.
Just on that point there, did I read somewhere over the weekend where GAA are looking to flip that back, right, because of the crowd situation and revenue?
Yeah.
They're looking to play the club first, huh?
I only heard that yesterday, because last week the fixtures came out that they were looking at the National Leagues starting on the, late February and then finishing with the All-Ireland in July. But I think, someone said that maybe there was a John Fogarty in the Examiner.
Yeah.
I think had it that there's talks of a situation where they might flip it, because obviously if the club goes first, by the time the intercounty then would start in August, that the vaccine would be in place and you know crowds back at the matches, and from a financial point of view, maybe they're looking at it from the point of view that to flip it around. So I don't know where that's at. I just saw that message that there is certainly a bit of talk and a bit of movement. Dale might know more in relation to it. They might flip that.
Yeah, there was a meeting Saturday. It was announced actually before the All-Ireland semi-final on Saturday night that the GAA had not made any decision on letting the inter-county scene go first next year, that they were reviewing it. I suppose the other thing that we've now proved, and the GAA has proved, that we can have a very successful inter-county season come November and December because of the state of the pitches, and more in particular, I think, Croke Park and Páirc Uí Chaoimh, that like we have now explored something that we wouldn't have expected, that you can actually have inter-county games at the standard that you'd expect in June and July and August. So I think it doesn't make any difference now in terms of the weather. Once the pitch, I think, holds up, you'll be able to have a great standard of inter-county championship.
But the only thing, Mark, is that, that was all right this year. We all made allowances this year. I mean, I was training in our club under 21s from November until St. Patrick's weekend, and we all set to go against our old rivals, Kinmaley, and it pulled at the last second, and it won't be finished now anyway. They're not playing us. So where is our All-Ireland club going to come into play? Like if the club goes first, let's say, and just say, like obviously the favourites in Waterford are going to be Ballygunner every year. How are they going to face in 10 months their club campaign, and Liam Cahill wants them back training if the club goes first? Like,
yeah, well, I suppose it's no different than the end of this year's season, Anthony, whereby I think the 14th of September was the date that all inter-county teams were officially allowed to go back training. And there were club teams still left in quarterfinals, semi-finals and county finals, and the inter-county management had to just move on without the lads. It's going to be difficult, Anthony, when you ask that question, because if you have a team that's involved in the latter stage of Munster and Leinster, you've 7 from Ballyhale are involved, you've probably 6 or 7 from Ballygunner. If they were involved in the latter stages, that inter-county team is affected significantly about it. That is going to be a problem, I would agree with you. But, does it mean that, I don't have an answer for it, Anthony. It is a problem.
Do we know when the GAA... We don't,
but it was nearly announced that the county would go first, for sure, and...
Yeah.
But then there was this meeting Saturday, and John Fogarty that had it, Larry, I think, that the possibility was. I don't know, Larry, have you a bit of info on it?
He said they're making the final decision next month.
One nearly wanted to be quicker than that, lads, for county and club, Joe, wouldn't it? Like, fellas would want to nearly know, wouldn't it?
Well, I suppose, yeah, I think ideally we'd like to know from the point of view, you know, it is only when I suppose they start thinking about all these questions, your situation there about club matches and the and Munster Club and All-Ireland Club, it's only when you start putting it into play, if you do go ahead with club first, the implications of doing that, you know, it's, it would be difficult enough, like if Intercounty is not going ahead until next August, you know, what sort of situation, how do you get hold of the players until when do you get them?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be really, really difficult because I think this year was a once-off in the context of the year that was in it. Everyone kind of bought in and Jay brought in the rule that you can't have the players until the 14th of September. I don't know, would they be able to do that going forward? And, you know, if we can't get access to our players between now and if you're starting back in August again, that makes it very difficult from the point of view of, you know, to go back to their clubs in that kind of situation. So I'm not sure. I think the implications of it need to be thought out. I'd probably still think the Intercounty will go ahead first.
The one thing anyway from COVID though is that, like, you know, a two-phase season is the way forward without a shadow of a doubt, you know. Yeah. I mean, you look at the club hurling and the advertisement and let's not forget that, like, you know, hurling is all about the community. It's all about where you're from. It's the grassroots. It's where you're reared, born and turned into an inter-county hurler, really. And to watch the club hurling sitting at home from all over the country, not only in a vested interest in your own county, and to watch the non-elite players perform all over the country was unbelievable, really. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And to be honest with you, it gave my appetite for hurling. It brought it back, looking at it, yeah. And reminded me of Munster Club hurling back in the day, Dalo. It was unbelievable, really. And I certainly think that it was a huge advertisement for GAA. And not only, you know, considering the players in this, but the families, the players that have kids, managers, some of you guys know how difficult it is in a prolonged season that spans out nearly 12 months and drains the shite out of you to a certain degree. I think now that managers, clubs, everyone can go away when this is finally finalised and plan properly, and clubs can plan properly. And I know all ye as well would love to be, I know in my time I would love to have a couple of months with my club players instead of just coming in after a defeat or a win or whatever and spend a little bit of time with them and, you know, just to spend that core couple of months or couple of weeks with them, you know, it can only benefit. But I certainly think that out of a bad, very, very tough situation for many, many people out there, it's certainly the GAA have come up trumps and we've learned something valuable from it.
Just one more thing, Dylan, next year, with my Board and Oak hat on in Gary's Bland, right? There's a change there too, which is happening all over the country. Is
this is from the academy now, is it? Is this the chairman of the academy?
This is from everywhere all over the country. Is that Board and Oak is now under 17. So the three competitions everywhere are under 13, under 15, and under 17 everywhere. So Fela is under 15 for everywhere in the country. And the other age groups, the clusters, then we say the non-competitive is going to under 7, under 9, under 11. And that's countrywide. So we've got notification on that. So there are changes afoot. And that's, I think the idea there is to, the fallout after 14, I think, is huge. So they're trying to maybe drag fellas to keep them at 15, which is giving clubs a better chance to hang on to them even further. Now, what clubs will do with under 19, under 21, I think.
So would you agree with this?
I do.
A lot of people saying go back to 18 and under 21. Mm. Intercounty, like from 17 and 20, weren't they?
They were, yeah. I think that under 20 and under 17 is fine for intercounty. I think for a club scene, like at under 17, you're belonging to the Board and All, right? After that, you're basically part of a senior club, right? I think maybe under 21 might be a bit late because anybody, like really good players, 19 or 20, they're really on their senior team. So yeah, overall, I do agree with it. But I'm just letting you know that change is in place all over the country for the coming year.
I saw that. And Brownie, we've kept you a long time. I just wondering, Brownie, how did the great Mount Sign miss out on one Jack Fagan from County Meath when he was deciding to throw his lot in with Tadashi? You normally mop up those lads, don't you?
We do at times, I suppose, but it just goes to show that you know, when you're winning and you're at the top, it attracts in people. And I think I think Derek Mack might have had a big part to play in that. You know, he obviously seen what we saw Saturday evening in Jack Fagan, and I think Jack was moving to Waterford or whatever, and built up a relationship with Derek, and I watched him closely in the club championships, and just wondering when it was going to happen. Really, but Jack obviously seemed that he had those attributes, but always a question mark. Could he deliver it at Intercounty? He came down from Meath, obviously, and could he step up to that level above? And I think he came of age of Saturday, but Jesus, what a paw on him, and you know, it just goes to show, like, you know, we get so tactical about short ball game and the way the modern game has gone, and yet the game probably turned on traditional kind of a set play where he just caught the ball in the air, laid it off, and went through, you know, and you just he just really came of age on Saturday.
Yeah, but Tony, the second goal, if you watch the run up Darragh Lyons, when the ball is in the air, like Darragh Lyons is gambling on Jack Fagan winning that ball. He's a brilliant run mate. Like, that's some second goal. So it's a little bit of both. It is the long ball, but it's still the coaching of those guys to make that run. And yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, incredible.
Ian Brick, one of my old pals from Kilmiley, would be great. Ian would have been over Kerry minor teams. That he had a great picture up on Twitter of a minor B final, an Ireland final, I think it was 13 or 14 of Kerry and Meath in the All-Ireland B final, and there was Jay Fagan. I think it's Rathmylan was his club, was it? I think it was Rathmylan, and he midfield. It just goes to show, like, if these fellas got a chance, you know.
I met him there. He's working here in Waterford, and I met him for the first time there, just up close. About two weeks ago, actually, and just the conditioning of him and the height of him, like, is.
Will he catch the ball off you?
I'd say I'd have to take three fingers off him first.
Tony, just one question. Like, I've actually six players named here now that we haven't mentioned for a long. Noel Connors and Mara Shannon have been mentioned. Right? Okay, they were left go, but I have Shane Bennett and Brian O'Halloran that probably didn't make themselves available this year for one reason or another. Brian, I think, might have retired. You know as well as I do that Shane has a huge amount to contribute. But the big two fellas here, Philip O'Mahony and Padraig O'Mahony. I mean, two lads that are not going to be probably involved. I mean, particularly Padraig, like, was he the captain originally at the start?
Was.
Who tore his cruciate? God, it must be tough on those lads going into an All-Ireland final, not being involved.
Tom Devine as well.
Yeah.
Tom is gone. Yeah, so it's look, when you look at it like that, it's phenomenal, really, you know, to be missing such big players and Padraig and Philip and certainly, you know, people would have raised a few eyebrows in Waterford when Liam came in first and there was no Noel Connors or Mara Shanahan within the team. But I think, like, he himself and Mikey obviously had an idea on what way they wanted to play, the style they wanted to play, and he probably felt they didn't fit into that, and he looked for athletes that could move, that were mobile, and it just shows where the game. He apparently, I heard lads talking during the week there that he brought in a speed coach. Now, I know a lot of inter-county teams, it's not new to bring in a speed coach.
Martin Bennett.
He obviously knew very, very early on the style of game, as Gerard alluded to earlier. And he wanted athletes that were mobile and can move quick and can move fast. And he had his game set and the structure and the type of style he wanted to play very, very early. And he wanted to pick players and leave players out that didn't fit into that model.
And Tony, you alluded to it a while ago. I also read the article Stephen Bennett wrote last week, right? And he alluded to Desi Hutchinson and his influence coming from 5 years in a professional game, what he has had on the running and the straight line running and how to fix the back, like, has been incredible as well. Like I said, we've kind of seen, I don't know, Dale, or you said this, it was like beating an offside trap, I think, for one of his goals against Clare, right? Like, but Stephen Bennett said that Desi has been a massive help from that point of view.
Yeah, without a doubt, yeah, from what I hear coming out of the camp, yeah, and you must remember, like, Stephen Bennett has been riddled with hip injuries, a couple of hip operations, and what he's doing on the field at the moment is incredible, really. When you think of that point he got when he picked up the ball in back in our own 65 and ran straight through a defence into Kilkenny's 21-yard line and popped, weaved players and popped the ball over the bar. I mean, that wouldn't happen. Dalo, that wouldn't happen in your time, fella coming through. Defence like that, you know, 60, picking the ball 65. But he certainly has. And, you know, at times there, you often hear people talking about the GAA and how elite it is and how professional it is and set up. And I was lucky enough to get an insight into Leinster rugby. A pro setup, and the same with Desi Hutchison, you know, over in Brighton or whatever, and you know, they're big into kind of the technical aspect of running and agility and change of movement. And you see Desi, he's able to like just he's acceleration. I'm talking sports science now here. I'm getting into sports science a little bit. He's acceleration and he's deceleration in terms of the way he's able to stop quite quickly and just leave his player go past him is phenomenal, really. And I'm sure that he brought, you know, the lads see that in training and they're watching it and they're watching the way he's able to do it. And certainly from what I hear of all accounts, lads they're asking the questions. They want to learn. It's a good sign in the team when players want to learn and they're asking about kind of physical kind of stuff rather than hurling skill. You know, you know you're onto something then, you know, and certainly he has brought a lot of that. He has brought a lot of that pro tips, shall we say, to the table.
Yeah, Brony, we've kept you an hour. We let you go back and mind the Bob Oaks and thanks a million for joining us. And look, I think we'd all here love to see McCarthy going down T bar, TJ. No, we can't say
TJ looking at it.
Would love that. Yeah, he'll be wanting it for himself. But as I said earlier, it's that, like, it's the one big county that has that hurling, always Division One, you know, always monster contenders. All, like, it's that one county that has to end the famine. And you know, I think there's a great chance of it anyway. I know you're up against a great team, but there's a great chance of it.
Great chance of it, Dalo. Please God, you know, and as lads mentioned there, hopefully, I think if we can, you know, if we can turn up for 60, 70 minutes from what we've seen in that 30 minutes in the second half of the last day, we'd be definitely in with a shout, you know. And even I know coming away from the Munster final, Liam was actually very disappointed in the display that day against Limerick. So that'll tell you as well, you know. So hopefully this team will turn up and the occasion won't get the better of them. I don't think it will. They have experience in that department, you know. But no, listen, look, for Waterford to win in All-Ireland, even talking about now, I'm getting emotional. It'd be unbelievable. It'd be unbelievable. I'm sure TJ wouldn't deny us that one. And lads, look, it's great to be on. Great to chat to you after all, you know. I'll get the hair cut, get the beard shaved for the All-Ireland final. Hopefully, back on. And lads, if we win it, you're all very, very welcome down here for a couple of large bottles of stout.
Brownie, we'll hold you to that, kid.
There, no problem, lads. No problem. Pleasure, absolute pleasure, cheers. Lads. Great to chat to you.
Great to have Tony there, lads. Just the insight brilliant. And the whole hunger of, you know, what it would mean to them if they do get there. And, you know, I know, TJ, you can't think like that. It's like, some fella asked me there the other day, actually, on I think it was just a private message on Twitter, just would it affect Limerick or Galway with the whole country nearly wanting Waterford to win? And I said, absolutely not. You know, and you've been in that situation, Gerard, back to your playing days. Well, you've been hot favourites, let's say, and you're Cork, and you've 20-something All-Irelands at that stage, and you can't do sentiment like, can you?
Absolutely not. No chances. You're dead right. There's no way those, you know, those Limerick guys, I suppose, from the point of view, like, they're a top-class team, like, you know what I mean? They, you know, sentiment plays no part in it on an All-Ireland final day like that when you're, you know, when you're out trying to win an All-Ireland. You know, maybe afterwards, if Waterford do happen to win it, they'd say, well, fine, like, but I'd say the thought process leading up to it, like, will be just about themselves and being ruthless and about the opportunities that they have to win, you know, to back up, I suppose, to win another All-Ireland within 2 or 3 years. It'll probably justify, you know, the talk about them and how good they are. Like if your Mick don't win this one, you know, if they only win one out of three, you know what I mean? People will maybe question them a bit. They have a chance now to back it up. Like, you know what I mean? They came close last year, got to the semi-final, but they'll be looking to win two or three All-Irelands, like, you know what I mean? So as you say, sentiment will be no part on Sunday week.
Yeah, plus it'll be John Kiely's fourth season as well. Like, and if you know, it's a funny one. Like, if he lost this final, won the Tiege with all they've collected. Now, in fairness, they're watching Declan Hannan picking up cups left, right, and centre. And funny one, though, if you don't go along, now and finish the job in 2 weeks' time, it'll feel weird. Of course, it'll feel magical. First team to win 73, and all the heartbreak was ended that day, and what a magic day that was. And but just there's something in this one that needs to be completed, like.
Yeah, I suppose, look, this team has been extremely successful for Limerick and you can't take anything away, like back-to-back Munster titles, two league titles and an Ireland title. So I'm not saying that they have to do more to prove anything to the general public to say that they're a great team. They are a great team. I know we do say about county champions that it takes a good team to win one, it takes a great team to win two. And I suppose what Gerard has just said there, for history to be kind to them, they probably would need to win another All-Ireland. And I think... they've done everything right. They've just won the semi-final. In a way, as a manager, you would nearly like to win a semi-final. You don't want it to go down to that in the 75th minute to be a draw and you just get home by three. But it's a way that their minds will definitely be focused. They got the job done. For me, I thought that they were by far the better team. I thought around the 50, 55 minute stage there that they were going to kind of put this game to bed, and they didn't, and they left Galway in there. And that can be dangerous. I'm not sure exactly what an effect Joe's injury at that time like had on the game. Like basically, like it was 22-20, Galway were coming right back in. I know they leveled it afterwards, but just a great game to win for Limerick. They got out of trouble and during the All-Ireland final, which is all they could do in the day.
Yeah, I was doing my few notes, TJ, watching it, right? And here's my few notes, right? And I didn't put times on it only at certain times, right? But right, first thing I wrote down was Galway very hungry. Second thing I wrote down was tackling crisper. Third thing I wrote down was pushing up on Hannan. Barry Nash now loose. On 14 minutes then I wrote, Limerick touch, shocking.
Yeah.
And then there's a little gap and I had 7-2 written down, which is a score.
Yeah.
Then the next thing I wrote with a little gap was Limerick getting a grip. Puck outs then and an asterisk beside the puck outs, right? Obviously, they were starting to turn over a few puck outs. And then I wrote Hegarty score, massive run from Kyle, now 8-6.
Yeah.
Started to turn around then, didn't it?
It started to turn around. And you like the other factor for Galway was Cathal Mannion went off in 24 minutes and he was probably a significant loss to them at that stage because he's a brilliant runner and look for the ball, say, out of defence and from the keeper. He's a good keeper and he made a couple of great saves. Some of the puck outs were probably self-inflicted and a couple of others were like when you're going short with the puck outs, there's always that risk and Limerick would have been sensing those and they'd have been looking for the turnovers. So they were making life difficult for him. And like when you have big boys around the pitch there, like Will O'Donoghue, Garrod Hegarty and them, like it's hard to get puck outs away. But it definitely became a factor as the game went on. Like Limerick got no score for the opening 9 minutes of the game as well, which was strange. And like Galway definitely shaded the opening quarter. But that second quarter, and I know John Kiely alluded to that flow started to happen. They got some great scores. The two boys, Hegarty and Tom Morrissey, obviously very good. And so it started to happen. And then like at half time, you felt that Limerick were in a decent position. And I suppose at this stage, maybe like Joe Kenning's line balls were so effective that like if he hadn't to put those over the bar in the first half, like they were like nearly like freeze like for Galway. If he hadn't scored those, Galway would have been in a far worse position.
Yeah, and do you know, like I don't remember doing it too often now, but I remember fellas around me doing it where a wing forward would take on a wing back down the sideline, like he was going skinning him. I was the fella being skinned now, but we had a couple of fast lads as well. And no, they'd get back, maybe club match on time, county final or county semi-final, they'd get back and they'd flick the ball off the hurley out over the line cleanly, you know, and they'd get a massive cheer off the crowd, like, great defending young Cunningham or whatever. Like, no, it's absolutely lethal doing that, isn't it?
Especially if you're playing Galway, but I think, like, you look at other teams as well, you know, we have a few here below, Mark Coleman, Declan Dalton. Most county teams now, like, look at Tipperary, Ronan Marr, it's an art and a skill that the lads have perfected over years. You know, you go into training now, you see guys like, it's nearly a competition on the sideline now. They're all practicing taking the sideline pucks, like, you know. It was exhibition stuff, like 4 out of 4, like, you know. I think the camera angle behind when you see him, do you see the flight of the ball, the way he's able to control that ball, bring it in from left to right. It was superb. It was absolutely superb, as you say.
I think he did it in the Fitz final, Gerard, in 08.
He did down in Cork, down in CIT. He's been doing it for 10 or 12 years since he broke through, you know, onto the scene. It's been his trademark, and he never fails to deliver on it. Like, and I think just yesterday, you know, every single one of them under pressure saying, "Can he do it again? Can he do it again?" They were brilliant, and it's just a brilliant skill. But I think remember a couple of years ago there was talks of, you know, adding a second score for make it 2 points. I think, you know, it would have been a, I think it's a skill in itself, you know. Like, I think it was the right call to leave it at one point. I think it was the right thing to do. But just fantastic. All teams have it now at this stage. Like, it's just a brilliant skill. I know when it doesn't go well, you're saying there's a puck out back down the field or whatever it is. But I think the way the guys can practice them so often now, it's definitely worth a chance to, you know, they're so good at it.
You know, yeah. Have you ever seen him knocking one down, no, Joe? Has he ever just one dribbled down the ground? I don't think I've ever seen it anyway.
Is this like yourself out golfing, like?
Yeah, because I've plenty drives knocked down, like, but I've never seen, like, he just meets it so sweetly every single time. Like, it's just 100% consistency, like.
He's like, you nearly expected there were going to be points, didn't you? Like, Kyle Hayes knocked one of them over the line. I think, no, he didn't knock it over the line, but he kind of miscontrolled it. And you just said, oh, Jesus, that's a pint, didn't you?
I did. So we were at home, right? We were saying that Joe was saying 2 points down, then Fintan stands up to a line ball in front of the home stand. And we're there saying in the sitting room, well, at least Joe was gone, right?
And you obviously knew about Fintan,
though. Fintan knocked it straight over the bar to bring it back to one leg. That was some striking the ball as well. And he was unlucky. Like, he was looking for another one. So they could have actually ended up with 6 sidelines in the game.
You showed him all that, obviously, Fintan.
I showed him everything he knows. He had some second half.
He had some second half, and probably a mistake not to play, you might say.
Yeah, it was tactical. Like, no, in saying that, Sean Aftis was picking up Graham early doors, and like he did a great job on him. But they made a lot of changes at half time, and for a while, they were starting to work because Gerard Hegarty's influence in the second half wasn't anywhere near it was in the first half. Tom Morrissey was probably more consistent all the way through. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think Shane O'Neill this morning will look at it to say they got Limerick down the stretch on 75 minutes, the match was a draw. Pádraig Mannion killed a huge amount of the space. I listened to Davey last night, and his analysis was very good, like, in terms of the ball to Galan, and the inside forwards didn't do the damage. I'm just asking the question this morning. Were they containing Limerick, or did they really go for it? I suppose that's the big question for a lot of people this morning, isn't it?
I think you're right. I think they played a game that's alien to the mark. Like, have you ever seen a Galway team with a sweeper before?
No, I mean, and remained with the sweeper really for nearly most of the game, barring when the game started to drift away from them. I thought they left it too long altogether. I thought that Dahi Burke was well on top of either Flanagan or Galen inside, and I thought Loftus was quite capable, and I thought Fintan Burke coming on made a big difference. You know, last week my thoughts on Shane Cooney, I didn't think he should start, and I thought Tom Morrissey cleaned him out in the first half, and he actually, because Tom Morrissey was starting to bring Limerick, I thought, back into the game when they were having a bad spell. But I thought overall that Galway, after a blistering start there, and you mentioned the 7-2, they were outstanding in the first quarter, but I thought they started to go back into their shell slightly, and I thought they spent too long being defensive. They should have come out of their shell a bit earlier and went man-on-man on Limerick, because I thought they had the beatings of Limerick. And I suppose Conor Whelan, even though he had a very, very good game, he had a couple of scores that went awry at, I think, late in the game. He had one particular one over on the Cusick stand side that it should have been over the bar. And like, I thought Limerick had the Robert Green Anthony coming down the stretch now as well. They got a couple of points. There was one foul in particular where Garrod Hegarty took out Adrian Toohey under the high ball, and the ball broke into Tom Morrissey, put it over the bar. And Aidan Hart had a couple of very loose clearances that were turned over as well. Like, they got 3 points in the last 3 minutes, and they were all mistakes from Galway. Now, to me, the game could have went anywhere, but a bit too defensive, I thought, Anthony. And you know, Paddy Mannion, even though he's a very, very good player, wouldn't you love to see him playing at half back, maybe, like, you know, delivering good quality ball and being able to mark a man at the same time? So for me, I thought
a bit of a mystery, Mark, how Gerard Hegarty came off the field without even getting a yellow card, wasn't it?
Incredible. No. And like, it was something that I have in my notes here, that I thought Fergal Horgan had an outstanding game on Saturday night, and James Owens, and he's a top quality referee now, to be fair. And it's something that Brian Gavin has mentioned. It's only his second game this season. It looked like a man that was only getting back up to form. But like, he missed a couple of obvious fouls. I thought the Gerard Hegarty one on Joe Kenning was the most blatant one of all. How he didn't get a yellow card for that is very surprising. I'm in agreement with Alan. I don't think he intentionally went to, it wasn't a striking, but it was, you know, that's it's wrong to say that, but I mean, you know, it definitely was a yellow card. It wasn't a sending off, I thought.
Do you think if James Owens had seen it, he obviously didn't see it? Well, no. Obviously watching the ball.
I'm going to bring you back now to our discussion about technology. So if the technology was used on Sunday, I think we may have had definitely a yellow card for the incident, and it might have put James under pressure to give him a red card for it. And that's why I'm saying, like the Galan incident in the first half, where he flicked Ian Murphy in the net, no need for it whatsoever. It wasn't picked up by either the umpires or the referee. Again, video evidence. A man up in the box said, listen, James, you need to go in and book in Galan. We saw it as punters outside. We saw the replays as punters outside. There would be no punter complaining if they both got yellow cards. And particularly the late incident as well for the Tom Morrissey, that he took Tuohy out of it, like.
But you couldn't compare the Galan one, Jarr, and the Hegarty one. Like, I mean, Galan was basically, I'd say, acting the mega small bit, saying to the keeper, keep poking him out like that. You know,
there was a bit of psychology there, like you were doing. Yeah. You know, thanks for that one, because it was a mistake from young Murphy that and Galan is, you know, he likes to go in and, you know, he likes to have a bit of a chat every now and then. So yeah. I thought, you know, there was nothing in that really to an extent, but as you say, it's, you know, by doing it, you're leaving yourself open to maybe getting a yellow card, and all of a sudden, you know, you might get another one late in the game. You could give a high tackle and you could be in trouble. So, like, it probably should have been picked up. The umpires are probably watching the ball gone over the bar, and he just came in a little tap. I thought there was nothing in that, but certainly Gerard Hegarty's one, he was just, you know, it was, I don't think there was any intent in it. But, you know, if James Owen obviously didn't see it, because normally something like that with a strike at a hurley, it would have been a yellow card. And when you get a yellow, all of a sudden, you know, you can, you're on tender hooks, because you can, you know, one more silly thing that you could be blown for and it could change the whole game, like, you know. So, as I say, just going back to your earlier point there, that TJ reckoned to us, what was strange about Galway, I think, was that the fact that it was only, you know, they had a week between the tip match and playing Limerick. And for them to go with a sweeper where they haven't done it all year, you know, like it's a tactic that you wouldn't associate with Galway all year if they haven't done it. So,
well, they did for the first half against David Bourke.
David Bourke. But there was a gale of wind there in the
there was.
You know, but again, I suppose it's a question. As TJ said, was it containment or, you know? But when you look at it, they went right down the wire. You know, the 73rd, 74th minute, they were level. You know what I mean? So, you know, people could say.
Would you say, like, there's a lot of talk about the goalie this morning, and I thought he actually, his goalkeeping was superb. I mean, the save from Reedy was as good a save as we've seen in years, like, the way he stood up to it. Another very good one was it from Shemmy Flanagan, the first half. Yeah. But, like, would you say, like, I never remember James Scahill or Cullum Cannon going short too often, unless there was a blatant guy on or something and they were playing a particular team. Like, this is a new kind of a thing for, like, and Limerick are very good at going short because they're used to it. And we watched it in the Munster final. I was at the Munster final to be able to see Hannon finding 5 yards of space. I thought, like, an awful lot of these puck outs were very marginal. Do you know, they'd have to be, like, nearly like hit out of a bow and arrow to be.
Yeah. You have to be on the money, I think, if you're going short. Yeah. Like that. I think somebody had it this morning that he was kind of, the puck outs breaking down gave Limerick 5 scores or 5 points, and in tight matches that's huge, you know what I mean? So, but I suppose what he's been brought in for is that obviously it's the way they want to go, that they want to go short, that you know, they're looking to get possession. Possession is, you know, 9/10 of the law now, but what's probably unusual is that, you know, Galway do have the likes of Joe and Cathal Mannion in the forward line, like, you know, that they can go long if they want to, but the fact that they had the extra body in Pádraig Mannion back covering meant they had an extra body there in defence to be able to give the short ball to. But what probably left them down was that the execution didn't probably wasn't just on the money. A lot of those need to go into the hand. You know, they were on the ground, and all of a sudden, if you just miscontrol it for a split second, the Limerick forwards are all over you, all trying to turn you over. And I think it's the impact of those scores, Dalo, in some of the games can be crucial. Like, you know, when you get a turnover, it just lifts the team. That when you turn over a puck out, it gives a team a great lift. And I think yesterday, like, five is a huge amount of scores, you know, indirectly as a result of a puck out going straight.
I think the more significant one was probably the one in the 76th minute, which was when Limerick had gone a pint up, right? And then he went short and it just went over. I'm not sure if it was Aidan Hart, but Tom Morrissey just cut it out, and off his left, he put that ball over the bar. That probably, at a pint down at that juncture, that probably just nailed it, didn't it? To go two up there, let's say, with a minute or two to play.
And TJ, he got caught up in the first half as well.
Well, he was very unlucky. Like, he was blessed. It should have been a goal for Graham O'Kane. Yeah, he was blessed.
What was impressive for me, if he was going to do it, is that he stuck with it. You know, Obviously it was attacked. He didn't. Sometimes when, you know, you hit one short or you're too short, the next one then you're tempted. Well, I'm going to go with the next three or four long because I'm not bringing any focus on it. But in fairness to him, he showed great courage to stay with it, and he stuck with it, even though they might have come against him later on.
Yeah, everyone would tell you about him that he has been coming, Tommy Larkin's man, and he's been coming, and he really is the best keeper in the county. And sure, look, at every goal he'll have days like that, won't he? Like, but for me, like, he doesn't concede a goal. I'm delighted with my goalie, but now it's a different job now, Jordan, even your day, like, isn't it?
I know, like, from a goalkeeping point of view now, like, you're looking at a goalkeeper, and shot stopping or ball handling, like, are probably going down the pecking order nearly at this stage. That the first thing you're looking at now with the goalkeeper is that, you know, he's going to have the ball 30 or 40 times in the game, you know, maybe even more. What's he going to do with it? And how good is he on the puckles? And I think nearly every, you know, every goalkeeper in all top teams now, they spend more time practicing the puckles now nearly they do as regards shot stopping. So it's a crucial element of the game now at this stage, what your goalie is going to do with the ball. And, you know, you've got to be brave. You know, at times, like, it's very difficult. It's easy to stand on the sideline and say, look, you know, you're looking down on the pitch, why doesn't he pick out this fella? But when you've got six or seven forwards in front of you with the hurley up, trying to block space, trying to encourage you to, you know, one puck it over my head.
It's not easy.
And it takes great courage at times, you know.
The other thing too, Ger, is the game management from the keeper, because you don't really 100% know what the opposition are going to do until the game has started, right? So it's kind of in his own hands then, let's say, once the game starts. Like, if everybody pushes up, you've got to basically the option to go long, if they give you the option to go short. So the game management side of it is huge. It's that you have possession, you want to keep it. So it's a massive area of the game. Both the puck outs for and the puck outs against now is probably one of the biggest factors, I'd say, in the modern game.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
No doubt.
TJ, I didn't see you producing the tactics board at all on Sunday.
See, the way he says that, like, TJ,
I didn't see it either, Mark. The only thing I will say is there was a significant difference between quarter one and quarter two. So whatever was discussed and whatever was put in place, it definitely worked. I have to say, I've been critical of the camera work for some of the games. I thought in Croke Park now, behind the goals, even the camera last night and the Sunday game from back in the Hogan stand, where you can kind of see a clear picture, really, really good. And actually, speaking of cameras, Dale, I'm not sure if you're watching any of the races in Ferry House yesterday, right? Envoy Allen and Bally Adam.
Machine,
yeah, unbelievable. But did you see the camera from Ballyhack where they had the camera?
It was the drone.
Unbelievable, right?
Brilliant.
So again, I'm just saying in to take things forward down the road next year or the year after, there's definitely something there. We don't maybe need the zip line now like they have in the NFL,
American,
right?
Yeah, the American football, yeah.
But in order to see the formations and to see the way these puck outs, I think the general public would learn an awful lot more on puck outs and what's facing the likes of Anna Murphy if you have those type of cameras. So that's coming down the road, part of the future. If you were a coach coaching for or coaching against, that's the type of camera work you'd like.
Don't be giving Dave the ideas.
But the zip line, okay. Zip line in Wexford Park in January, was.
And the interesting thing, Joanne Cantwell made the point that that the RTE had a feed on the referee's mic as well during the game.
I think Sunday. They had that for the last couple of years. They had it for Ireland finals.
I'd say
only the final last year now.
Park, is it?
They had it for the final last year, but she was the only one in the RTE box that could hear it. The rest of us,
right?
I don't know what way they were giving her access to it, or one mic or whatever. But,
but does that mean so that the referee is definitely mic'd up to another referee himself, I wonder? Or is it that just...
Well, he's definitely mic'd talk in Crow Park, so he's in that room. So I'm not sure if he's mic'd to another referee or not.
Did he overrule Hawkeye at one stage? Not overrule it, but did he just tell the umpires, I saw it going over the bar?
Yeah, there's no need for a Hawkeye.
There's no need for Hawkeye.
I thought he said he tapped his ear and he probably got it. It was a point anyway.
What's the zip line, TJ? I don't watch that American football tell.
Do you know, we were in Las Vegas.
I was twice.
Did you go downtown Las Vegas?
I don't know, I just was
That's
in
the very first question. Well, I know.
So no. I was just in a casino and there was some lady bringing me off a treat.
Well,
you were obviously losing. Were you losing?
By the time I went up to bed, I had no money left.
It's basically downtown Las Vegas, right? It's kind of a big, long street where all the casinos and everything's at, right? And there's a zip wire, a zip line, right? Basically all the way completely straight down the street, right? So from one end of the street, right, you effectively can, like a bird, you're kind of basically hooked up with your back to the zip wire, zip line, and it'll take you straight down, all the way down the street, like this, you're flying over everybody. But in the NFL, they have a camera which basically runs straight down the middle of the field, so you can get an overview feed. So when the guys are in the ruck or just basically on the play, you can see exactly what's happening underneath. So that's something new for RTE coming down the track.
Okay, I hope you're listening there, Joanne. Get on to Declan McBinnett there and tell Declan get on to the bosses there. We need a zipline camera.
Yeah.
And so, have I to go up on the zipline camera then?
You know, do you know what? That probably would be very new, and do you know, it would be something.
That's a circus now, is what you need to go on today, though.
Yeah, do you know, during the water break, and then at any break in play, you could maybe really inform us on the puck outs, what's happening, the movement. Yeah, good idea.
I think I said, Jamesy, get onto the first there. He'd be down the three-piece suit, going down the middle of the crop. He'd be about the only one fit enough to do it anyway. I'd definitely bring the camera, zip line, and the whole lot down with me anyway.
On that, if anybody goes to Las Vegas, go down to the old town Las Vegas, right? It's an unbelievable, straight down the street.
Yeah, I have. No, I did do more in Las Vegas than just
the casinos.
Gamble my money in casinos. I did a bit of that too. But yeah, I did do a bit of a tour around there, and even we found an Irish bar there at one stage as well, back in the day with the Dubs. And we had a lovely Irish stew, myself and Richie Stakedom and Professor Chris Thompson and Kieran Heatherton, the bald hedgehog. We had a bowl of Irish stew in Las Vegas. That'll tell you how sad we are when we go abroad. We were only gone for 2 weeks, or a week, even when we had to go for a bowl of Irish stew. And they had Guinness draft. It was lovely, Mark.
Yeah, actually, I think you know the name of that pub. Was it Five Irish or something? I don't know exactly.
Yeah. That's it. The one with the big shamrock on it outside, is it?
Yeah.
You've been there a good bit, TJ, have you?
No, Vegas. Only there once.
JP brought you?
No. It's my wife brought me, actually. So I would highly recommend it. Anybody who's into, whether you like a show, a bit of gambling, whatever it is you like, Las Vegas. We did the Hoover Dam and all that, the helicopter. So, yeah, definitely. Well worth
it. The Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon, yeah. And go along to the old town and check out the zip wire.
Tell you what, Ting Vai.
You'll learn a lot in this podcast.
I'll tell you one thing. He's so mad that TJ Ryan by it, you know. And fellas will be saying he's not a fella from Knocklong there, like, do you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't know much about it.
You wouldn't see a zip wire in Knocklong guys blend there, like, tell
you that. You're going to be signed up for a travel show next, TJ.
Anyway, back to the matters at hand, Delo. Limerick.
Yes, TJ.
We're back in the All Ireland final. Perfect. I would say approach from a semi-final point of view. Boys get back on track this week.
Any bit worried, though, TJ? Any bit worried, like?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'd be more worried now, like, about Waterford than I was. Like, I was really, really impressed with them, and I'd be also concerned this morning that the news on Aaron Gillan isn't exactly what you want to hear. I'm not sure the extent of the industry or the injury, but anybody who spends a night in hospital 2 weeks before an Ireland final has to be a concern. And I think that the game plan that Limerick play a guarantee.
Galan is really, really significant to what they do, and I think he'd be a massive loss. I'm not sure, like Seamus Flanagan definitely was a help, I think, in that he's somebody else to be picked up, right? I'm not sure if we have somebody else in that Galan that he can play the same role. As many players as we have, I think Galan is key.
Yeah, and the boys highlighted that before the game yesterday on his movement. I think it was Henry highlighted it. It's very hard to coach that into someone in 2 weeks. I know
it is in behind or in front, and as I said, he's free taken. Just a huge asset to the team. So he'd be a big loss. But no, certainly, I didn't see the odds. I think my father told me this morning it was something like 2-5. I think Limerick and maybe around 5-2 or something. Waterford.
Yeah, 11-4.
11-4 is it okay? So yeah, good value. As I said, the parallels between Limerick in 2018 and Waterford what they're doing in 2020 are there for everybody to see. They're definitely on an upward curve, Waterford. I said it last night to you there, like the guys are really in the zone. I was wondering, was there even a performance coach working with this Waterford group that they're so clued in and so just basically on task and sticking to the process? And I mean, very, very impressive. So yeah, really, really tough job at hand.
Could you put your finger, was it just down to Galway's tactics, Mac? Could you put your finger on the slow start from Limerick? Like me, as I said, my first five notes, Limerick touch, shocking. Like even Graham Mull's chance of the goal, like he rose that ball perfectly, but he just didn't take it in his end.
I think potentially the fact that Galway had a game played the weekend before, Anthony, they may have, you know, been a little bit match sharper, I would say, at the very start of the game. They were coming in as outsiders as well, so they were going to bring the game to them. And like they got a fierce good start in terms of, you know, I suppose they set up with a sweeper, and it took maybe Limerick a couple of minutes to get to grips with who's going where, who's going to be the loose man, and ended up being Barry Nash for a good bit of it. But I think in the overall, like we know that Limerick are a real consistent team. They don't do panic. Once they start to get into their stride, they're like a well-oiled machine. But I think in the overall, looking at it, I think actually Galway, the game, I said that the semi-final might take a bit out of Galway because of the ground conditions in the Gaelic grounds against Tipperary.
Yeah.
And I think that actually might have impinged in Galway. We'll never know. But like if you go back to horse racing and stuff like that, some horses will go on soft ground, some horses need good ground. To me, like Waterford are definitely a good ground, and they had played in Parky Queeve the week previous, and I'd mentioned in the pod, I felt that they would be fresher and it wouldn't take as much out of their legs. I think the match in the Gaelic grounds took a lot out of the Galway players' legs. I didn't think they had a whole pile of zip. They just trudged through it physically. It was a savage physical game altogether. But I think part that Galway thing was they were really fresh, I thought, in the first 15 minutes, and they started to get sluggish, even though they hung in there and they hung in. And Lasca Halmanian, last Joe Canning, Joe's last was late in the game. Mannion's was a more critical loss as far as I'm concerned because Evan Nyland came in and really replaced what Joe Canning was going to do because he was outstanding when he came on. But
that mark, when it was so tight at the death, not having Joe in or on full forward, maybe, do you know?
Yes. But I do think, Anthony, that the loss for Galway was constructed by their own defence. Because the last three scores came from mistakes. And I don't want to be pointing out Aidan, and he was brilliant. He was the match winner against Tipperary, but he made a couple of crucial mistakes. And the goalkeeper, the puck out that TJ mentioned, it only went over his fingertips. And went straight into it. And like Tom Morrissey hit that off of 65 yards off his left, cool as a breeze. So I think the mistakes were at the back, Anthony, rather than actually the opportunities that weren't missed up front.
We probably would have been good soft operators ourselves. I would say it would have been our optimum ground, wouldn't it? I would
love the National League.
I thought at the second water break that Limerick were 5 points up. They were 21-16. I felt at that stage, Dale, that they were in control of the game. And for me, I was kind of waiting for maybe the killer punch. I think, and even looking at John Kiley's body language, I think they were looking for it. I think David Reedy had a great chance, possibly should have put it low. I think if a goal came at that stage, I think Limerick would have ran out maybe a little bit more comfortable. But they left Galway in the game. And then, as I said, we know what happened from there home. But I just felt that around the middle of the part of the second half, around the second water break, I think Limerick were well in control of the game. Mm. It'd probably be a slight concern for John Kiley that they didn't close the game out there because, like, we know how strong Waterford finished. So that will definitely be a concern for him.
I thought you were goose-tidge. I thought it was a typical example, and we've seen it so often. a team that's so dominant. And I was even saying it to the girls who are outside in the room watching it, I was saying, Limerick are going to lose this, lads. They're going to lose it. You can just tell. I said, they got their chances. They should be out of sight here, and they're going to be caught. And I suppose that it's a good sign of them that they still managed to win by 3 points then, when they had nearly blown it, like, back to level, as you said, on 75 and won by three. And there's no goal involved there.
No, and it's always a great sign of a team to find a way, because, just as you said, the momentum definitely had swung. And it's 75 minutes was a draw, and they found a way, which was huge. I thought in the second half, I thought Keane Lynch's influence was huge. He was involved in a lot of stuff that happened good. And the other significant factor for me in the second half was Peter Casey's introduction. Who scores came off him. You know, he made a massive...
Scored two, made three, did he?
Yeah, possibly. Like, it just was a huge, huge plus to have someone like a player like Peter Casey. Probably would have been disappointed, even though, like, this doesn't really make sense, my statement, right? Is that I don't like leaving Peter Casey out, but I think that Seamus Flanagan in makes us stronger up top, like, so it's kind of a little bit contradictory. So make what you can of that deal.
Yeah, we'll discuss it next week, I suppose. But if Gillan is fit, it's going to be a fair headache for Kiely, Casey, or Mulcahy after yesterday, like, isn't it? Like, who starts, who comes on, you know?
Yeah, I suppose the beauty of it is you've got four really good inside forwards, which is a big plus. Yeah. And I said yesterday was Peter Casey's turn. Like, his influence in the second half was possibly a match winner.
Yeah, we spoke about the new managers early in the year, Ger, and you know, we wouldn't include Kieran in that. I suppose we'd include as Brian Lohan and Liam Cahill and Shane O'Neill. In fairness to Shane O'Neill, to be a fair old scorecard after the year, wouldn't it?
Yeah, 100%. They've done really well, you know. But you know, he came in there, that did. But they know he had that. They are a very good squad, you know. And he took over a very good squad from the lads up there. They're a very settled team. They've got very, very good players. Like, there's some huge men. Like, I suppose so. The team that he got, like, really were there, you know, they've been contenders. They're thereabouts for the last number of years. And, you know, I think, as you say, he's done a good job. He'd be disappointed, I suppose, that they didn't win Leinster. You know, they put themselves in a situation to win that game. So at the end of it, he hasn't won any trophies. But, you know, first year in, I'd say he'd have to be happy in relation to where he's taken the team. He's brought in, he's introduced a few new players. There's probably a few more on the way. There's a few of the lads that have been around a while, but they're still there. Thereabouts, they'll be, you know, they're still hard. They're a very hard team to beat. Some great players, you know, and they finished up the game without Joe, without Cathal Mannion, and still came very close to winning it.
And for them, your one All Ireland is kind of unsatisfactory, really, isn't it? For Joe, for Aidan Hart, for, you know, the fellas still being Johnny Cohen. The Mannions are still young, I know, but a lot of the, you know, Dahi Burke, well, five All-Stars, like, but one All-Ireland, like, as a bunch of players, they probably would be under, they wouldn't be satisfied with that, like, if they look back on it.
Yeah, definitely, no doubt, you'll be saying it, like, when you name all those players, they're, like, often really, really good players, you know, they'd be looking for a bit more than one All-Ireland, and it's a bit like the Limerick point we mentioned a while ago, you know what I mean, that, you know, Limerick have one, looking for the second one, you know, sometimes you've got to, the great teams back it up by winning a second one after they win one. So, but Galway are not going away. They're still going to be around. There's some really, really good players. You know what I mean? I think that they're still a force to be reckoned with. They've got some good players coming through. Probably haven't seen as many of the minors or under-20s that they've had over the last number of years that maybe are just struggling to make the breakthrough. So, still, I'd say, as you say, they'll be disappointed that you only have the one over the last number of years. But, you know, the margins are so tight now between winning and losing. You know what I mean? Yesterday could have been, as I say, you came down the stretch. You know, they lost by three in the end. Like, but it's probably, that was probably harsh on them, you know.
Yeah, probably a bit of a victim of being thereabouts all the time, like, nearly. Well, except for last year, we would have just caught coming out of Leinster, but, you know, thereabouts all the time. Whereas Tip probably have come in, like, in 16 and last year and won them, and then haven't been kind of near them in the other years. So, probably a better way of going at it, Mark, if you're beating semi-finals, the desperate disappointment, pick it up again, and maybe at times if they were out and got a complete break and then come at it again.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, just kind of a case of trying to fill the tank and come with everything, get it over. Like, winners find a way of winning, Anthony. That's the thing about it. And you go back to all the good quality teams, you know, whether it's hurling, whether it's soccer, whether it's rugby, or like Leinster United. I see you didn't get over the line, Dalo, over the weekend. But looking,
we're top of the table.
Yeah, Liverpool, of course. And what we did a Fergie time again over the weekend, 3-2, you know. Like, for a crowd that were totally out of it in the season, lads, we're only 5 points off the top with a game in hand. So, you know, anything can happen. I know you're going to be
really... Katie Barry.
I tell you, Fernandez by and that other like Cavani. There's some operators up front.
Say that again. What's his name?
Cavani, is it?
Cavani. Come in for your dinner.
Poor old Maradona. We lost him during the week as well.
We're on about old drones there and the brilliant picture of Ellie Hack and Fairy House, like, and the zip wire from TJ. Jesus, like we didn't get to mention it. Jesus, when you were 16, lads, I was 16 when he won that World Cup. And he bait the Brits and he hand passed it into the top corner, the net past Shelton.
Different class.
To leave some impression on you now. There's no doubt in my mind, you know, who the greatest ever was. I know a lot of the young people that maybe listen to this now, they'd be saying Messi or Ronaldo, which of them? Yeah. Jesus, Maradona for me was just the king of all kings, wouldn't he? Like,
yeah. Well, for me, like watching Pele and watching Maradona, they were brilliant. But like we only saw the clips of Pele. We didn't see really in full flow for an hour and a half. But if you put the clips of Maradona together, I thought for his skill and his ability was just incredible. He was marginally ahead of Pele. You know, the new brand is obviously Messi and Ronaldo, but 60 years of age is too young, Dela. Like, you know, so you better watch yourself. Mind yourself.
He enjoyed it. He enjoyed it, Mark. That's the key to it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's lots of people live to be 97 or 98. They don't fucking live it at all. And there's no hitch on a hearse, Mark. You just want to remember that now, kid.
You can't leave it.
You're piling it up there. You're piling it up. You're investing it. And them three young fellas will enjoy it.
By the way, just in case you catch me out now next week, the Queen is back. She's entered for Thursday in Clonmel.
Okay, listeners, the Queen is back. Is that a hurdle race?
A hurdle race as the Limerick man predicted, she'd be back over hurdles before Christmas.
Yes, you threw us off the scent there a few weeks ago by saying she was back and she's going to Dundalk one of the nights. And TJ said, no.
She'll go for hurdle race first, so we're giving her...
What would this be now for her? A handicap hurdle?
A handicap hurdle, 2.2-3. A bit soft for her, like, you know, even though the owner might like it soft, she likes it. She's a bit like the Waterford team. She likes good going.
So, TJ... TJ, how many pounds well in is she?
I think she's off 88, Mark. Is that right? Over
88 off a hurdle. I can't understand. The handicap will never dropped her. She ran in Tullis, beating 30 lengths. Handicap will never dropped her. What do I do with that, TJ?
You run her again?
I said, beat by 40 lengths, isn't
it? Yeah, she'll probably get an educational run. You see, the handicapper probably looked at it and say it wasn't a true run. If you're kind of within 20 lengths, probably say, yeah, maybe it's more of a true run. So if you stop scheming, right, the handicapper probably be fairer with you.
He wouldn't do that.
Can I give you Ken Budge's number? You might give him... finishing in 20 lengths, so is that the key?
Right. I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Send the horse up to Gary Spillane, they're training for you. Anyway, look, great show again, lads. Good. I mean, we've next week, I presume, we'll be going, Larry, we'll be going midweek because we'll be building up to the final. I suppose the football crew will want the stage after the semi-finals on Monday morning.
Yeah, I think they'll want a day out, all right. Yeah, back on we'll be back on the Thursday, I'd say, before the final. Yeah,
good stuff, and we'll have a good look at it then. And you know, I suppose, lads, just to touch on.
Before you go, Dylan, can we give the listeners a little hint? Are you green? Or are you blue? Which way are you leaning towards after the weekend?
I still be probably waiting until next week. I hear about the injuries situation and things, you know.
Okay.
Well, no, I can't make any more changes to my fantasy team. Les, the top of the fantasy table is just turning in to an absolute... I'm not sure.
I'm disappointed.
2 points in front. Is that right, Larry?
You are... No, you're 18. No.
Am I 18? Jesus, that's better than I thought. No, but,
how many did you lose over the weekend? How many players?
I lost all the four Kilkenny Felicia.
Right.
And I still have... Joe, I'd only Joe, so that was one good thing.
Oh, it's a big help.
But I still, Larry has his two midfielders and six forwards.
Oh, how about you, Larry?
Five forwards.
What are you missing?
TJ. I had to keep TJ in.
Oh, yeah.
You're the strongest, are you? So, and at the other end of the table, there's this little item has to be given out at the Christmas party whenever that takes place. It is the wooden spoon. It's now a two-horse race. I'd say Brian Hogan has pulled away out of that situation, although he was strongly Kilkenny. But it's now a race between yourself and Derek. And poor old Derek made no changes at all when the transfer window came in. And you're still bottom of the table. Like, have you acted at all?
I have no problem accepting the wooden spoon, because it was my maiden visage into the fantasy hurling. Yourself and Mr. Ryan.
Go away out of that.
And you made no changes until all the teams were announced on Friday night, Jehoria.
Like, how do you know that?
Yeah, we're shocking here. My spotters were out. They said, Dalo has no changes made yet. Like, and like in Egypt, I made a couple of changes midweek and I left one open. How Cody put in Richie Hogan, I never know. But anyway, we slipped up. This put it down to a bad experience, Dalo.
Yeah, and I told you about Richie Hogan that he'd be starting. I know the way Cody operates. I told you Shammy Flanagan might be a possibility going in. You laughed at me, like, but look.
Come here. I'd gladly take the wooden spoon if I could see Waterford win the All-Ireland. And that's not against Limerick. Yeah. I'd love to see Waterford winning it.
You're getting the wooden spoon anyway.
Will you be saying, like, Don Logue, like, that you'd like to see him bait back to Mountkind, like? Limerick.
I wouldn't be anti anyone crowd. The tip crowd with the Orly crowd, I'd have to be in the opposite side of the fence every time against tip. I have tremendous respect for Kilkenny.
Honestly.
I loves me neighbours down here in Water from the southeast.
Yeah. Look, it's so much to look forward to. And yeah, we've touched on a bit of everything there today. We got the tour of Vegas, Larry. We got a bit of the horse racing in Via Allen. We got a lot of tactics on the games, a lot of updates on the horses, Mark's side of things. And we just want to wish you the best of luck next weekend, Larry, in the bag of wind, Gaelic football. They call it the bag of wind up here.
Ah, thanks, Dilo, yeah.
So let you keep it pucked out there, yourselves in Mayo, boy. I'll tell you, it's great for you. And look, I was talking to you there last night, you know, as we were chatting away about the show today and what we do and breaking the news to me that Brownie was coming on with us. You let a shout off, Larry, that you thought Arsenal had got an equaliser. But unfortunately, and fortunately for all of us, Larry, it was no.
No, we were denied there, yeah. I thought Alba was going to do it there, middle of the second half, but yeah, he let me down again. No, it wasn't a great night.
I was just thinking there, right? There's been one or two calls for a Christmas special show from ourselves, right? If you get onto the paper, right, or maybe Tony, if we could do our Christmas party stroke Christmas special in Vegas, right? Then I could show you what I'm talking about. And then you can go and talk to RTE. Wouldn't that work?
I tell you why, that you're onto something there, kid.
There we go.
Come here, how is Donny coping with all this? I know he's famous, Donny Ryan is famous in his own right anyway. Like, but this newfound fame again, like, or this renewal of his fame, how is he coping at Martin's and places like?
See, the Mets are all virtual at the moment. The crowds aren't back. Like, so he's kind of waiting. His phone has happened. He's not getting a stroke done during the day. So, but he's ready for the tour, he said, in the spring. So he's ready to drive us. We have a driver.
We have a driver.
Yeah.
Oh, and come here, is he flexible on the, like, he'd stick it out till 2 or 3? I know Landers is warning me about lifestyle there. And
well, Doyne doesn't
go got at 60.
Doyne doesn't drink
when
himself.
I go on tour, like.
Yeah, once there's a cup of tea there for Donny, he'll be fine. And once he's home there for about 7:30, 8:00 to milk the cows in the morning, we're in clover.
Yeah. We put him in charge of the Bucker Boiler.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dale, before you wrap up there, give a mention to the boys at the top of the league. Gerard Grogan, I think, is the leader now.
Oh, yeah, Shannon Gales. Gael na Shunna. He's top of the overall league and he's top of our league, sir. The McKillian lad is second, isn't he?
Kieran McKillian is second.
Yeah, great stuff. I'm looking at that lovely Hurley and that box of slitters and socks and grips and everything. Two of them I have outside there. So, and obviously the wooden spoon goes everywhere with me. So, it's like the little sketch last night.
I saw the little thing on Twitter there last night where Loch Nan threw the little Hurley into David. Is that the same?
Yeah.
Same one.
You see, I tell you, that sketch by Conor Moore, the little snake from Mullingar, who I'm good friends with, was one of his best ones. But you know, the worst of it was, the eerie part of it was how close to the truth that was. Some of the stuff in the dressing room, like, which you wouldn't want to be mentioned in Short Puck House to Loch Nan, like.
No, I'd say that.
Sweepers. Jesus. Anyway, right. We leave it at that there and we talk to you next week. Good stuff. Great to have Brownie today just to get the, you know, I got the feeling off him what it means to him. But I thought you almost, well, Brownie's always kind of tranquil anyway, but you got that kind of easy feeling that he's feeling good about it, TJ. Did you smell that across the airwaves?
I did, and in fairness, I suppose, look, what these, like, the two teams, Limerick and Waterford, have brought in 2020 is a consistency. I know Waterford didn't win the Munster Championship, but they're just being consistent, and we might have had a history of maybe going back in time of kind of being up maybe one day and down another day. So you can see that in the Waterford team, and I'd be slightly concerned with the parallels, as I said, with Limerick in 2018, this Waterford team. They are certainly a danger, and I did feel it off Tony Brown.
I got it off Tony Brown as well. We'll talk about it next week. We'll know more about injuries and game plans and stuff like that. And you can bring the tactics board with you, TJ, for your background. And
I'll have it.
We can see you setting up the what they might do and where they might try and expose X, Y, Z.
No problem.
Great stuff, lads.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.